Chapter 32. Loss. On that day, Ascargos fought hot, Amit fought cold. Blood Angels and World Eaters murdered each other in packs around the two of them, but the wider war narrowed to the two gladiators and the weapons in their hands. Amit knew how Cargos fought, better than Cargos himself. The nails gave his chain brother strength, but stole his memory, while Amit remembered every beat, every second of their time together in the pits. For Cargos, as soon as the butcher's nails bit, every fight was against a stranger. He relied on strength and speed at the cost of experience, which always served him well, Amit had to concede. But even against opponents he'd dueled 100 times before, Cargos was always fighting them for the first time. Amit knew the angle of every blow and the strength Cargos threw behind it. He knew which ones to block, which ones to parry or deflect, which ones to evade by weaving aside or leaping back. Cargos's brutish new axe was a fresh consideration, but the World Eater used it the same way he used his last three chain axes, and Amit had the measure of it within moments. It went against Amit's own instincts to hold back, only blocking and weaving away. He wasn't built for bloodless battle. Muscle memory and centuries of warfare made it a trial not to lunge when he thought he saw an opening, but he knew Cargos's swiftness too well to play with the risk. Already Cargos was frothing at the mouth. Amit saw it in the half-face, visible in his chain brother's broken faceplate. Grunts became growls, became snarls, became roars, with each wild swing cutting nothing but air. Just like in the arena, Cargos craved contact, the shedding of blood, the impact of a fist against flesh. Without it, the nails knifed into his mind, goading him on and punishing his failure. Amit smashed aside a blow with his vambrace, leaned away from another arcing cut. He couldn't wear Cargos down. The nails wouldn't allow it. The World Eater would erode down to nerveless bone before the pain engine in his head let him realize the limits of his body. Amit watched for the right moment, the balance point between his own weariness and Cargos's nails-born frustration. If he waited too long, it wouldn't matter how frenzied and artless Cargos became. The Blood Angel's strength would always leech faster. He cuts, and he cuts, and he's chopping air, and breath soars in and out of his open jaws, and the flesh tearer isn't fighting. He's not fighting. He's doing everything but fighting back. Cargos hears these grunts and these curses of wordless sound. And is it him? Is it he who's snarling like a kicked wolf? He cuts, he cuts, he cuts again, again, and there's acid in his spit now. He can feel it infused there, milked from his betcher's gland. He can feel it warm on his chin as it runs from his roars. The flesh-tearer is a ghost, a coward. He's not there. He's not there. And Gorechild thirsts, and he can feel the axe almost slipping from his grip in the thirst for blood, or the thirst for a new bearer, one who will not fail, and the nails are pinching and biting, and they drill. They drill, they drill, they drill into him, and Amit is laughing, and the nails drill, and they drill, and the back of his brain must be bleeding by now, and Amit goes for the axe. No, not the axe, the chain. And they're grappling, and Cargos is stronger, but Amit has the chain, and he can't breathe. He can't pull his chained arm free. He's leashed by his own weapon chain, wearing it like a slave collar, and he can't breathe. That's fine. He is Astartes. He can survive without breath. But the bones and ligaments in his neck are clicking and crunching, and it's the sound of branches breaking, and then he sees it. Cargos sees what's been behind Amit's eyes all this time. He sees what was inside his chain brother's soul every time they stepped into the arena. He sees the predator under the perfection as Amit goes for his face, fangs like ivory knives. He feels his brother fasten down on his cheek and bite and throw his head back. There's the unreal ripping of wet leather, and blood sprays, and Amit spits out a mouthful of his own brother's face. There's no pain, though Cargos knows that will come later, when the nails retract. Then there will be pain aplenty. And there's no mockery in Amit's gaze, no laughter, not even any glory. There's just princely hate in those pale eyes, and flecks of Cargos's blood showing stark against the sclera. Then he does it again. He does it again, this time fastening his fangs on Cargos's nose and other cheek, and this time the ripping comes with the sound of grinding gravel. The Blood Angel takes bone and cartilage away with him. And this time, Amit swallows. He swallows the flesh of his brother's face, and he takes inside him the taste of his brother's blood. Cargos can feel the dawn air on naked bone, and he wonders even through the nails. He wonders, how much of my face is left? And then there is a sound, and a feeling in the same terrible second, a crunching snap, like a grind and a gunshot in the same instant, and Cargos flails because his spine is breaking. He lashes out blindly, fingers fumbling and finding Amit's belt knife, and drawing it and ramming it back over his shoulder into his brother's chest plate. It scrapes and stabs and deflects from the ceramite until it catches a joint and slides inside and bites. Meat bleeds. Blood runs. Amit falls back. He is free. Free! The pressure is gone, and Cargos goes for his axe, and he turns with a scream to finish this. He turns right into Amit's backhand blow, and something breaks inside what's left of his face. Amit's fists are cracks of thunder, each one painting his senses with smears of pain that blind him, literally stealing his sight. And Cargos feels the joints of his jaw give with a dislocating crunch, and he feels the bone at the side of his skull crumple like tin, and he feels cold air and acid spit on his mutilated face. Amit's blade drives into his guts and is torn back out before Cargos can even breathe. He staggers, but he doesn't fall, though something has come undone inside him. He knows that. His legs are weak, and he raises Gorechild, swinging it, but Amit smashes the axe aside and sheathes his sword in Cargos's guts again, this time carving up before pulling out. Eye to eye, face to face, it is the most intimate moment of Cargos's life, a moment of intimacy without sensuality. The two of them joined by the impaling blade, and everything slows down. I told you, Amit breathes, to eat shit, traitor. The Blood Angel moves away. Cargos doesn't give chase. His legs fail. Time passes, or seems to. Perhaps it does, perhaps it doesn't. The sounds of war are dim now. Cargos is on the ground. He looks up at Amit. His vision is halved, and he realizes he's lost an eye. What remains of his sight is stained red. The nails no longer bite. It's like they've burned themselves out, burst in the back of his head, no longer able to spread their poison. There will be a moment now, a profound moment of brotherhood. Their gazes will meet, and they will acknowledge how far they've both come. They will share, unspeakingly, all that has brought the two of them to this fated moment. But there is no moment of beautiful fraternal reflection. Amit fights on, grappling with other world-eaters, fighting the war instead of devoting everything to this single duel. Cargos watches him, burbling through the vocoder implant in his throat, demanding that Amit acknowledge him. Yet Amit fights on. And soon, Amit is gone. Boots clatter around him, several thud into him. He can stand. He can. He just needs to gather his strength now the nails have deserted him. The world-eater turns his head, pain lightning bolting down his abused spine. He stares into the pulped remains of the cyber monkey, its skull crushed in Inzar's grip. Strange, ugly little thing. He turns his broken head again. Above him is a churn of clashing bodies, their identities meaningless. Their blood rains on him in warm spatters.
Inzar, he tries to say. I can still beat him. Help me. Help me up.
When the bodies break away, Inzar is there. Kargos lifts a hand, trying to rise, needing the preacher's aid. But the preacher regards him through the eyes of his skullish helmet. He doesn't take Kargos's hand. He presses his boot down onto Kargos's chest.
As pathetic as Khan, the word-bearer muses. Able to butcher anyone on the planet, except the one man you want to kill. Brother, Kargos tries to say. Help me up.
Either he doesn't manage to say it, or Inzar doesn't care. The word-bearer lifts his foot away, turning to the towering sanctum.
So close now. Inzar! Wash my name from your tongue, weakling. Preacher!
But he's shouting at nothing and no one. Inzar is gone.
Medic!
Kargos calls.
Apothecary!
And he starts laughing. Land and the others ran, but they didn't get far, only to the next barricade. The Imperial Army soldiers there were already falling back from the position, making for the third and fourth redoubts, closer and closer to the gate. Shenkai was white, losing the strength to hold his hand to the stump where his bicep ended. His robes were painted down one side, dark with lost blood. Blood still flowed between his weakening fingers, trickling far slower than its previous spurting gusto. Land guided him to sit and crouched before the thrall, gripping the younger man's chin with dirty fingers. He forced Shenkai to meet his eyes.
You're going into hypovolemic shock, he said.
The thrall nodded, but Land could tell from his eyes the young man had no idea what Land was saying, or even who was saying it. Transactor 7Y1 collapsed next to them both, screeching a spiel of wounded code. Land thanked her. She was right, of course. And he went for the canister of armor cement, hanging from the thrall's webbing.
I'm going to cauterize the wound, Land told the shaking thrall. Then I'll... Look, just hold on, Shenkai. Just hold on.
He aimed his Dark Age pistol up at the sky, discharged it once on maximal settings, and a blast capable of atomizing a rhino launched upward. With a murmured, sorry, he pressed the hissing barrel against the stump of Shenkai's arm. Flesh sizzled, and Shenkai yelled, which Lan took to be a wonderful sign, given current context.
Almost done, he promised.
And then, because it wasn't the same thing, but it was equally true, he added,
We're almost there. We're almost at the gate.
He smeared armor cement on the cauterized stump, ending the last of the blood flow. Exhaling, he turned to Transactor 7Y1. T was failing to hold in the biomechanical slug cables that made up the ropey portions of her intestinal tract. Several loops of the stuff had already slipped free in their run from the first barricade. Blood, in interesting and sacred shades, was running from her vitals in uneven trickles. That world-eater. The one that screamed Amit's name. That world-eater had come close to killing her. Lan swore in particularly crude gutter Martian. Transactor 7Y1 replied that she did not believe such an act was biologically possible. Then she allowed that she already knew this, and that she had been making a joke. She queried if he found the joke funny. Lan didn't smile. He looked over his shoulder, where 50 kinds of hell itself was making its way along the ascension, held back by surrounded clusters of defenders. Transactor 7Y1 informed him that, in her considered opinion, it made the most tactical sense to leave her and go.
I'm not leaving you.
Arkan Land had heard and read these words uttered by fools with symmetrically balanced features in various tales of fiction in the past, and always found them trite beyond comprehension. Now, as they left his mouth, he meant every syllable of them. Transactor 7Y1 replied that he was compromising his already slender odds of survival, adding that she was dying, and Land, expiring here with her, wouldn't change that outcome. She was also in significant pain, but she neglected to include that. She didn't wish to add to his emotional unrest.
When we first met, Land said, you saved my life.
Transactor 7Y1 allowed that, yes, this was true, and that he had been sufficiently pleasant company since then. Thus she did not regret the deed.
I'd name my firstborn after you, he said to her. But I despise children.
Transactor 7Y1 pointed out that he was also of extremely advanced years, far beyond optimal breeding age.
Yes, that too. But come on, we can make it. We can make it, T. I can fix you once I get a good look at you.
He rose, awkwardly straining to lift the unconscious form of Shenkai. His bad leg gave way at once. He couldn't do it. He probably couldn't even have supported Shenkai's weight in the prime of health. He was a stick-thin old man, and Shenkai was a muscled thrall who trained for war every day of his life. Nevertheless, Land tried again, and a third time when the second failed. The Martian sagged down after the last attempt, groaning at the strain.
Omnisire, he prayed, it's your most devout servant, Arkan Land.
A group of soldiers vaulted the barricade, all filthy, all catching their breath before the final sprint to the gate.
And my prayers are answered, he said.
They regarded him with adrenal confusion.
My name is Arkan Land, he told them, and I am a deeply important man. It's likely you have heard of me. I need you to help me carry my friends to the sanctum.
He trailed off, then remembered.
Please.
Two of them lifted Shenkai, and Land turned to T, grinning.
Let's go, you stubborn skit. Just a little further.
Land's smile dimmed.
T? T?
Transactor 7Y1 didn't reply. Quite why Land did what he did next, he was never entirely sure, and he would have denied it had he ever been asked about it. But he cradled her helmeted head in his hands and kissed the metal forehead. A radiological alarm deep in his robes gave a warning click. A shadow fell over him, bringing the drone of power armor. He jerked around, scrambling for his pistol, raising it, only for a blood angel to knock it aside. Zephon bore several new wounds that would most surely scar, and his face was sheened with blood. Land had never seen him look quite so destroyed by exhaustion and injury, even when they journeyed together into the Imperial Webway. Frankly, he'd looked better carved open on a surgical slab. A host of Blood Angels were touching down, landing before the gate, falling back before the advancing horde.
Go, Zephon bade him. This is the end, Arkan. Make for the gate while there is still time.
Zephon,
he said the name with almost insane calm. Lascannon fire screamed overhead, turning the void shields briefly prismatic and making the air stink of dirty ozone.
Arkan, the Blood Angel pressed. My friend, the gate. Go while you still can. We cannot hold them back much longer.
Zephon,
Land said again with the same intensity. For a moment, Land wasn't sure what to say. Then, for the second time in a week, and only the second time in over 60 years of adult life, he burst into tears.
Zephon, they killed my friend and my monkey.